Hello, everyone, and welcome to Linux the Rest of Us, episode number 114. It's a show about Linux, software, hardware, all things that Linux touches in our society, which are quite a few things these days. We cover anything that comes up that piques our interest or we think that you would benefit from as a community. I'm co-host Cody Cooper. I'm only part of that equation. The larger part of that equation is a.k.a. Door-to-door geek Steve McLaughlin, the Linux maven. How's it going today, Door?
Going very good, even though when I come home, it's supposed to take me like an hour and a half, maybe. It took me, I calculated it out, 3 hours and 52 minutes from the time I left my place of business to walk in this front door tonight.
Why so long?
Okay, well, if you must know, because you twisted my arm.
I do.
It wasn't traffic. It was the fact that now I'm carpooling, and my wife had ideas about stopping here for this and stopping there for that, and while we're out, let's stop over here for this, and then stop over there for another that.
So, at least you weren't stuck in traffic.
I don't know what would have been better, I'm not going to lie.
I'm betting traffic.
I don't know. I just miss the day
ding
of being able to get in the car, click dog catcher on my device, and listen to podcast without caring about traffic or anything else, and then calling up Android Buffet and wishing Jerry well on his wait, and then driving a little bit more and, you know, calling up the Geeksters and leaving a voicemail, and I don't have that anymore, Cody.
Along the same lines, I don't have a car anymore. Mine died, and I don't really need one because I work less than a mile from home. But yeah, I used to, my night job, my old night job, used to listen to this show and all the other podcast shows late at night, and then call you guys on my breaks and leave voicemails or on my way home and listen on the way home. And yeah, oh well, you know, life moves on, and we're still alive and kicking, so that's good.
Yeah, and I'll say that's the beauty of voicemail. Doesn't matter when you call, it's all good. 707-6-PODNUT if you want to leave us a voicemail. Don't forget that, people.
And please do, because we're still in the process. We've had a couple of voice messages sent in recently, and I do appreciate it. We're redoing our hardware setup to where we can utilize a lot more of the voice messages on the show, but I would like to have some more of them that we can just sort of start that off right. So please send them in.
Yeah, and the more voicemails we get, the more harder we're going to work to get it done faster.
You got that right. That I will twist Door's arm for.
Yes, and that's okay. as long as it's not the right arm, it's all good.
There we go.
Okay, for the basic, this is not a repeat. Patience will get you awfully far, especially when it comes to computing. And by that, I mean, sometimes it might appear like your phone, your GPS, your tablet, or your computer is locked up and it's frozen. But once in a while, show a little patience. You might be shocked at how well it works. And again, the techie geek is not dead. It's not pod fading or any other vernacular used for such a term. It was just recorded for the live listeners. Hopefully, by the time this gets published, also, the Techie Geek, the latest episode, will be published. I do not want people to think, well, Russ has changed now, he's not going to do a show. No, he is just as dedicated to the show. Biggest difference, like we were talking before, Cody, you basically walk to work because it really isn't that far.
Yep.
I used to live 7 minutes from my employer. Now I moved. Now, sometimes it literally takes me 2 hours in traffic to get home or more. Russ had the opposite happen where the same as me, where he lived respectfully close to his employer. Now it's definitely a trek, which is taking away from his home time, which is taking away from his organizational time to do the quality of podcast that he expects to be done. Mm-hmm. So it's taking a little bit longer, but he is still doing it.
Definitely. And I can speak to this, and I'm sure you can too, Door, that when you have those, you know, life changes, big or small, it's going to throw that wrench into your day-to-day, and you're just going to have to learn to adjust what you may want to get done as far as tasks, whether at home or at work or for hobbies or fun or just personal endeavors, whatever they may be. And he's in that process. But it would be one thing if you and I were just talking about this, saying, wow, I hope he gets back to it, you know, where he posted on Google Plus. No, he actually came out specifically. He made a point to come to us and say, please let your listeners know that there is more on the way. We are not pod fading. And seeing that they're over 100 episodes in, I mean, just on that show, those guys have already done their other things. I cannot wait to hear the next episode. And if you haven't heard them before, go to thetechiegeek.com, download every single one of their episodes, just listen to them one after another. They're just some of the best podcasting on the net, period.
Yeah. And I'll say, he talks a lot about links and services. As long as those services are still up and active, they can still be an extreme benefit to you. And the other thing I got to also follow up on is OLF. As far as I know, no one has yet volunteered to help coordinate the volunteers. They're looking, and I realize this, Cody, you described it perfectly two shows ago.
Yep.
I have to apologize to you and apologize to everyone else. I didn't completely pick up on the gist of it until last week when you said it. This is not super demanding. All you're asked to do is to help coordinate where volunteers go, when volunteers go, and what the demand is of how volunteers can be utilized, how many should be needed for XYZ. This is not a insanely hard task. And dare I say, it can be done maybe a little remotely. Mm-hmm. I don't think you have to be on site for 99% of your time.
No, not at all. Not at all.
So I really encourage people, please, news@ohiolinux.org is the email address, if I'm not mistaken.
That's correct.
Email can help out where you can, when you can, if you can, with any Linux open source free software fest in your area. And if there is none in your area, this might be the perfect one to help out.
Definitely. And if you don't mind, I'll read really quick. Kevin O'Brien, who's put forth the request for the volunteer coordinator, I asked him for a more detailed description of what they were looking for, and I'll go ahead and read that again right now because it's real quick. Kevin O'Brien writes, what we are looking for is a person who can help with recruiting volunteers. As you know, I do a lot of recruiting through publicity channels. But more importantly, plan on where and when we need volunteers and assign people as required. So the heart of this is coordination. I would hope we could recruit something in the neighborhood of 30 to 40 volunteers by the time we get to the event next September. Some of them we need to watch doors, some of them we need for the registration tables, some of them we need to help speakers, and so on. I don't think we have ever been in a situation where we've had more people than we knew what to do with. Grin. Thank you, Kevin. And it's pretty cut and dry. And I got to tell you, even just from going to OLF this one year, I think a lot of this could be done remotely. It's going to have to, because you can't just gather volunteers when you get there and see who's available. Right. And I'm sure that you're not going to be the only sole person. I'm sure that they will forward information to you for people who are interested, and then you'll just have to coordinate it. I will put this out there again, like I said last week or the week before. If I can get a handful of Pondetsians to help me be the coordinator, we could be like a coordination team. If you know if you're thinking about going to OLF or you're sure, contact me or contact Kevin at news@ohiolinux.org. And if I can get a small group of people, I'm talking like as small as like me and maybe two or three others that are set and committed to do it, I'll just tell them, hey, you know what? We'll do it. We got it covered. Done. That's going to take one big thing off his mind, off their plate, and make the fest that much better, because they're going to have more time to plan for the essentials, which is, of course, making the festival great.
Yeah, exactly. Because they have very important things they have to do. Granted, they still have 11 months to do it, which people might say is a lot.
Right.
Goes by quick, people. Goes by quick.
But the volunteers are essential. They're the grease. They really are. They make everything work. So it is important. If you're interested, please contact us on those appropriate channels. Thank you.
Very cool. And I will say, I like hearing Kevin O'Brien's voice. He was on Sunday Morning Linux Review this past week, where Matt could not be in. Matt was in the hospital. Dude, Matt.
Oh, no.
I hope you're out I hope you're better. I hope it was a false alarm, and I hope you're cackling, laughing about it now. I missed that laugh last week. I want to hear that laugh again, Matt.
Definitely best wishes, Matt. If I could give you that $10 back I won from you to left to make you feel better, I probably still wouldn't give it to you. But I still wish that you're doing good. And I hope that Mary and Tony are holding down the fort for you with Kevin in the mix for last week. I can't wait to listen to that episode. So,
yeah, and you said Mary and Tony, and I cannot believe I forgot to say this, Tony. I am immensely sorry. Congratulations, newborn, less than 2 weeks old now. I'm not going to lie, I have a hard time remembering my wife's relatives' names. I can't remember your child's name. But I know if you're the dad, going to turn out to be a really good kid. And congratulations. I don't mind not hearing you on a cast because you're busy with that kid, man.
There you go.
Yeah. And Mary, if someone doesn't like Mary, I don't think I like them. Rock on, Mary.
Keep it going, Mary. Root that 3D and then get back to me.
Oh, no. She got a new one. She got a Galaxy.
I know, but she
S3.
Yeah, but she found the 3D. It's a longer story. We'll go into it later. But she gets to root and ROM it. That's all I'm saying.
I know, but you know.
Do we have Linux news this week, Dor?
Yes. Well, coincidentally, ironically enough, the show's called Linux for the Rest of Us. We have something.
Oh, fantastic!
Exactly. Okay. The first thing I gotta say is one of those things that I think is mislabeled. Okay. This is on LinuxLinks.com, which seems to me that it seems to be nothing more than a site overwhelmed by list, and it's like the top 6 for this, the top 10 for that, the top 20 for this, which I gotta say can be a great resource just to learn about your options. Okay, this one is called the top 5 programming tools for kids. I wouldn't say kids, because when I think kids, I think 5-year-olds,
right?
Okay, maybe for 10-year-olds, up to maybe even 13-year-olds. And I did take a look. I did actually install one of them. But I will say there's a list of 5, and the one named Hackatry Hack is just a good name.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know if you can get a better name. There's also one called Scratch, one called Processing, one called Alice, and then one called Greenfoot. And I will say, I was really tempted to install Greenfoot because Dan Fry, who's a Java programmer who I really do respect a lot, makes me want to learn at least a little bit of Java. And if there's any Java programming interface that could help me learn Java better, I'm really tempted to try it, and especially if it's designed for kids, then that might mean I might be able to actually pick up on some of this stuff. So Greenfoot is just to do Java IDE type code.
Very cool.
Yeah. The one I installed was called Alice, which is a innovative 3D programming environment, which I don't think I really grasped. Like 50% of it, I didn't have a lot of time to play with it, but I found it very encompassing. I found myself just playing with it, where you can technically, I think, design a 3D video game.
Very cool.
Yeah. And these are the kind of things that I hope over every year grow in leaps and bounds, because getting those kind of kids excited to use tools to make things, I think, is really undervalued as a whole on computing itself.
Definitely. I'm looking at these and the basic descriptions of them. First of all, I can't wait to load up Hackity Hack and give that a try. If you're interested in any of these topics that these programs are for, I would say give them a try, even if you're not a kid, because a lot of care, at least in some of the kid software I've seen, a lot of care goes into keeping the communication as clear and concise as possible.
Yeah.
So even though it might be directed toward children, all that means is that it's broken down into simple chunks. So if you were interested and didn't want to sort of leap head in first into some sort of like a professional environment where that might with all the bells and whistles, I kind of liken it to like going into using Ardour instead of starting with perhaps Audacity. Mm-hmm. You have this huge professional interface with all these options. Like, oh, what is going on? Start slow. Be humble. Realize where you're at with your knowledge on whatever you're trying to learn about. And potentially, if one of these tools fits, give it a try and send us an email and let us know what you thought.
Yeah, and I'm going to throw this in there as well. If you think at all you're moderately to severe ADHD, what I found to be very beneficial is environments with short, direct things, a direct instruction with a direct interactive environment with a direct result. That to me makes, dare I say, learning much snappier, fitting the pace of someone ADHD, I'll say. That's why when I did see Hackety Hack and I went through and looked at a couple screenshots, that one was dang near perfect for someone who is either obsessive compulsive and you just want to bang through it, or extremely ADHD and you just need direct stuff, not all kinds of fluffery and theories and all that. You just want to see examples of code, why code, how code, example code. Now, I will say this, Hackety Hack teaches you Ruby. A lot of people hate on Ruby. I'll say people can hate on it all they want. I see a lot of jobs for people that know Ruby. So I think Ruby is beneficial to learn, especially if you're new to the idea of coding, because Ruby doesn't seem incredibly complex, but it does seem like it's pretty powerful.
Very cool. Yeah, I'm going to have to check these out. Yes, yeah, some of these look interesting. I got to tell you, I took some C++ programming back in, I don't know, late middle school, early high school, but that's been forever ago. It's completely lost on me. So to have anything like this to get me sort of, especially since I have all the time now to really dig into my tech stuff and I'm hosting the show now, really, really wanted to dig into this. I can't wait to boot up some of these tools.
Gotcha, gotcha. Okay, this next one we're going to skip. I forgot. Basically, the gist of it, people, is I saw this article and I thought it was a good article. It's not a bad article, but instead, this next one that I'm skipping is making me bring up other topics in the coming weeks. So I will say that.
Oh, okay.
This next one, to be honest, I learned about today from Martin, who is in the chat right now, whose name is MaskilPDX. I can never pronounce it. Martin. That's all I can say, Martin. And I would say today I spent 2 hours solid in work in a meeting, and I spent almost 4 hours solid putting out a fire that needed to be put out, kind of thing. So I didn't have a lot of time today, and this one would have went right by me. So I thank Martin. Okay. Log Me In purchased a couple years ago a technology called Hamachi. Now, if you have the Hamachi hardware that you can get, it makes VPNing two networks together into one network unbelievably simple, quick, and powerful, to where I could have, let's say, my home network and my mother-in-law's home network tied in, to where each computer on both sides would think they are on the exact same network. So for her to access my webcam or me to access her printer or anything like that is super easy compared to trying to build the whole system up yourself. So Hamachi is an insanely powerful VPN, virtual private networking tool. It's not, it isn't like a tunnel. It isn't like an SSH tunnel. It is literally an application that can join two networks into one network, or join your computer to a remote network, just like you were physically on that network. Ooh, that was a lot. Okay. Now, yeah. Basically there's a tool released called Haguchimi. Haguchi. Higuchi. I'm going with Higuchi.
Higuchi's fine.
God, I'm just, I don't know.
You did break a door.
Thank you, thank you. They basically released a GUI for Hamachi on Linux, okay? I will say, the thing that is difficult with this tool is not the application itself, but it's the initial configuration to get both sides configured right so this tool does work. Now, you can have on my mother-in-law's network a Windows computer or a Mac computer, and on my network, I can have a Linux computer, and we can join our two networks together using these two separate tools. I will say, I'm honestly antsy, giddy to try this. I would love to be able to remotely have a device connect with my Android to Tether or whatever and Hamachi into my home network. We're on the road. I could literally do everything I can do while I'm here. So I'm really, really, really wanting to test this out, I'll say.
So just to help me and the listeners potentially understand this a little better, does this piece of software require the Hamachi hardware?
No.
Or is that just an option?
No. If you decide on the hardware, what it basically is, it puts what would look like almost a router in each house.
Okay. Okay.
Or each business or whatever. That helps make configuration much easier. And what that does is it puts your entire network on another entire network. When you use the desktop tools, it makes my computer, not my network, part of that remote network. So this is, I would say, especially super geared towards tech support, and you want to be able to remotely have your workstation appear like it's on your personal network.
Yeah, and with the tools I've used in the past, which I haven't used to a great extent, but very little to help family members and this and that, but I don't think it actually made my machine a part of their network. It was just a link between the two machines.
Yeah, here's the best example I can give differentiating tools like TeamViewer or LogMeIn from this. Okay, your grandmother is having problems connecting to her printer, and it's not on her computer, but it's on her network. Okay. If you team viewer into that computer, the problem could be that computer itself. It could be the hardware on that computer, where if you could Hamachi into her network, you would be able to print from your computer, you know, running applications on your desktop directly to that printer. So it allows for troubleshooting a lot more depth can be available to you if you know how to do that kind of troubleshooting. If you're still new to these kind of troubleshootings, I don't know how beneficial this tool would be. I know it would be cool, but I don't know about beneficial.
It'd be a great learning experience, because if this becomes popular, you're going to see all sorts of other derivatives of it and copies and copycats out there. I'm sure there are already some, but
yeah.
But yeah, remote support is going to be huge in the future. I mean, just ask Lisa Hendrickson. I mean, she's done wonders with it. And yeah, moving on from just the one-on-one to, you know, helping a family member or a friend or a client, but be able to actually get into someone else's network and help diagnose problems, not from within that machine, but from with your own machine. Yeah, that could be definitely beneficial.
Right. And what my one buddy does with this, he wants remote desktop access to all the computers on a network. Well, he doesn't have to install a client on every one of those computers. What he does is he basically installs Hamachi on the server. And then on every workstation, he has remote desktop enabled in Windows. So he Hamachis into that server. His computer is on that network. Then locally, he can launch remote desktop applications and connect to all the computers on that person's network with no extra software needed. And if there's a brand new computer on the network, as long as it's joined to the domain properly, even if remote desktop isn't enabled, he can enable it from his computer and then log into it. So you don't have to worry about loading log me in or TeamViewer or having the user go to the computer and go to a special URL to do these kinds of tasks. It's it's definitely a higher level. It's like an admin. It's closer to being an admin tech support tool than a low-level PC repair tech person, without insulting the low-level PC tech person.
Right, but even you're speaking of PC techs. Chris Berry spoke to this, where he decided to buy, was it LogMeIn Pro? What's the paid version of it? I can't remember what it's called. Anyway, well,
I want to say it uses join.me. It's not LogMeIn Pro, but it is one of the LogMeIn derivatives.
Right. But it costs a pretty penny per year. I'm going to say like in the neighborhood, like $600 to $750. But he decided to use that instead of LogMeIn Free or TeamViewer because of the convenience on the customer side. Because if you're trying to talk people, non-tech savvy people, or even tech savvy people, through multiple, I'm talking double digit steps on how to connect back and forth, that's a lot of time that you could be utilizing for many, many other things. So to have a tool like this that just breaks it down and makes it easier, very, very cool to see.
I can't remember what it's called. LogMeIn Rescue. That's what it is. There you go.
That's it. Yeah. Yep.
Where the big advantage to that one is you can basically just give somebody one URL and bam, you're on their box.
Yep.
Which, don't get me wrong, when you're not in a controlled environment and you have remote customers popping up all the time, this guy's home is in town A, this guy now is, and that kind of support, I can see where that kind of tool is beneficial, but expensive.
Yep.
Okay. This next thing I got to say, it's changed two or three times. I have not fully vetted what their final answer is going to be, but I will say, the bottom line is I'm not happy with this at all. Okay. Unity dropped 2D, which basically means if your computer does not have 3D graphics enabled, the 3D version of the desktop will be loaded. And all the extra processing that's needed to make that desktop 3D is then offloaded onto your CPU. If you have a lot of CPU, it's not that big of a deal. But if you're the normal person, it could definitely impact how your experience is on Unity. Well, GNOME has basically decided to do the same thing. They've decided that fallback mode will be dropped. This is okay, now the last I heard, GNOME fallback will be dropped, and they're going to do a very similar thing, which is enable CPU rendering for 3D elements on the desktop, but also allow you to add packages that will give you much more of a GNOME fallback type experience, which I think is kind of like taking away my pepperoni pizza, slapping me in my face, and then giving me a Lunchables cold, not even cooked pizza. It's not the same thing.
No.
And I will say, GNOME fallback, and for you people in another country that don't know what Lunchables is, just think of it as taking away my real cheeseburger and giving me a canned cheeseburger. Just go Google canned cheeseburger and you'll see. But the best thing to me about fallback mode was how accessible it was in comparison to GNOME Shell. Fallback mode was at least moderately accessible, and it was much easier to not get lost in pretty parts of the desktop. You had to basically focus on production. So with this decision, I don't know what it's going to take for me to load a GNOME-based desktop and to actually be happy with it and to actually want to keep using it. Because right now, if I do load something with GNOME on it, I typically log into that desktop at the most 4 times before I do install a different desktop environment on it, whether it be Awesome, XFCE, LXDE, OpenBox, whatever. So, thank everybody. We have choice.
Definitely. And that's just what I was about to say. This would be such a bigger deal and more of a, oh, woe is us, the sky is falling deal if it was our only option, but it's not. Luckily, we can tweak and customize it however we see fit. Now, with that being said, there's always the sort of two sides to this coin. You have the people with the older hardware that are saying, this is BS. I can't run the latest GNOME. I can't run that and this and that. And how dare they try to push me into the future and get newer hardware? Well, you have choice. Don't worry. But you also have to look at it from their perspective, too. If they're trying to keep the size of the install down, they have to cut corners somewhere. And as hardware progresses, you're going to have more people with machines that can run it versus more people that cannot over time. That's just the fact. At least they're trying to implement that CPU integration to where it can help take some of the weight off of not having the 3D acceleration through a GPU. But I understand both sides, because I've dealt with a similar thing in other hardware situations where you hear the argument from both sides. Mm. So worst case scenario, if it doesn't work for you, we have plenty of other options. You can try something else, but don't let that have you not try it, because at least they're trying to take some measures to make it accessible for more people rather than just saying we're cutting it off and it's done.
Right. Yeah. Can't agree with you more. To be honest, that's why I'm liking... I have in recent time been more and more positive in my head about Linux Mint and Cinnamon and Mate, even though I think over time it's going to be super hard for them to keep that up and to keep it up to date and to keep it compatible with all the packages that go with GNOME 3. I feel like their decisions are better for the majority of users, which I find ironic. One, I think, Irish guy is making better decisions, in my mind at least, than these communities, than this company called Canonical and this organization called GNOME. I don't want to speak any more ill about anyone else. Let's talk positive. Oh, wait, let's talk bad about Windows.
Well, we can't do that, but just a quick wrap up on that. I agree with you to a certain extent, but you also have to realize, and yes, I do agree with you that Cinnamon and Mate and the other kind of spins of GNOME are working out well, especially for older hardware. And it's going to take something like this to make them focus and work even harder to cater to that community that can potentially be left behind. So either way, it's going to be good for both parties.
Yeah, I do believe the chasm is only going to grow between heavy full-featured desktops and light full-featured desktops, and I'm on the light side.
Yep.
Okay, this next link is actually an article to Unix Men, which it looks like we have two of them this year. UNIXMEN.com. And the first one is to an article, Why Do Supercomputers Use Linux? Okay, first let's talk hard number and facts. And right in the very first line of their article, there's a link. Over 90% of supercomputers use Linux. Now, if we click on that link and go look, here are some of the base numbers that are facts. The top 10 supercomputers used Linux. The top 25 supercomputers used Linux. Out of the top 50 share, 88% use Linux, 6% use Unix, and 6% use mixed operating systems. That could be using some Windows, using some BSD, using some Linux. It could be a lot of different things. Okay. Out of the top 100 supercomputers, 87% use Linux exclusively. Okay. 7% use Unix, 5% is mixed. 1% uses Windows. One computer out of 100 in the top 100 use Windows, and that is a Microsoft-sponsored computer from tip to tailpipe. from beginning to end, Microsoft pays that entire bill. Okay. Now, if you go down to the 500 computers, 462 out of the 500 use Linux. 24 uses Unix. 11 mixed. 2 out of the top 500 use Windows, and 1 is BSD based. Okay, those are the facts. So people with money making huge projects for supercomputers have decided in huge majorities to use Linux. Now, to come back to the reasons why. The gist of it is, the reason why they use Linux are the same reasons why I use Linux, which is the same reason why Google uses Linux, which is the same reason why smartphone manufacturers who are winning use Linux, because it's scalable, it's modular, it's free code that you can take and manipulate to your heart's content. The driver base for it is insane. You compare everything else combined, okay? All the Unix drivers, all the Windows drivers, all the Mac drivers, you still do not come up to a total number of drivers that match the Linux driver set.
No way.
Now, you can look at that from a lot of different angles, and you can say, well, Windows has better support for ATI video cards, and you are indeed correct. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying in general, in total, okay? And when people are using supercomputers, they're really not looking at stuff like ATI video card performance, okay?
Mm-hmm.
They're looking at much bigger pictures, okay? The bottom line of it is they don't have to pay licensing fees. It's free and open code. It's scalable to the nth degree. And it's modular, which means it's very easy to load and unload things you do and do not want running. That makes for a great supercomputing experience. You know, that's just basically the bottom of it.
Proof is in the pudding. If the majority of the supercomputers is using it, it's got to be good for something. And I'm glad we have a show on.
Absolutely. Sorry, I had to cough real quick. I had to mute myself.
No problem. But yeah, if you asked the basic, you know, man on the street, what percentage do you think that they use? Probably they wouldn't even know that there was any other thing other than Windows or Mac.
Yeah.
But to have them be startled at like less than 1% out of the top 500, it would probably take them aback. And at that point, they might ask the question, well, what else is there? So that is a good kind of fact to have when you're talking to people about Linux. I mean, I will never tell anyone, you need to go preach, you need to go get your, you know, everybody to it, do it, because I wouldn't want someone else to do that to me with technology or like religion or politics or whatever. But it's still another fact to have sort of in your tool belt when you're talking to people about that. So,
yeah. And I honestly have no idea where I heard this from, but I believe it was on a podcast. Linux is the most popular operating system that people have not heard of.
Definitely.
And, you know, hence supercomputers, web servers, back end of smartphones, back end of smart TV devices, back end of NAS devices, home automation systems. People don't know that. All they know is the front facing part of it. And to a degree, I'm very okay with that, as long as this system just works. And that's what Linux gives me.
There you go.
Okay. Now this next one, I got from, I believe, Martin today as well. And this is also at Unix Men. And I almost, this made me feel good. And here's the reason why. Okay, it's called 15 Weird or Surprising Devices and Systems That Run Linux. Here's the reason why I like it. It might have been on this podcast or Linux Basics or Android App Addicts or, my brain just dumped on me. Droid Nation, Android App Addicts, Linux Basics, Linux for the Rest of Us, one of them. Where I've already mentioned almost every single one of these. So that it made me feel good that I'm already talking about these kind of things. Okay. The Cadillac XTS runs Linux. I will say, I actually saw the inside of this Cadillac, and it might be the absolute worst computing interface I've ever seen on a car. Okay. With freedom also comes the freedom to do it crappily.
Oh yeah.
I will say that, but this also was a Rev 1. Since then, more than a couple car makers have joined the Lennox Foundation. So I believe this as an entirety is going to get far superior quickly. Number two, the Large Hadron Collider. I know I mentioned that a couple times. The LHC is the most important to physics supercomputer in existence, at least in theory. And once everything gets fully warmed up and running over there, there is, for all intents and purposes, a lot of science that's going to be proven by that device. So that's really cool to me too. Number three, San Francisco High Traffic Control System. Mm-hmm. I've mentioned this one before too. Maybe not San Francisco, but a traffic control system. With systems that require zero downtime, immediate quick responses over the network, over the computing cluster and everything, and the option to be very customizable, to me, a traffic control system needs all of that going for it. So if you look at it from that viewpoint, it only makes sense that it's running Linux. And San Francisco can hire their own people and customize it so this system truly does what they need on their own systems. Number four, a calculator. Okay. A calculator.
An ARM, an ARM-based graphing calculator.
Right. I didn't do great in that part of math, so.
Me either, but it looks pretty.
Right. Number five, air traffic control system. Again, if you need a system that has zero downtime, won't blue screen on you, and is holding, let's say, many people's lives in their hands,
yeah.
I wouldn't want that to be a Windows-based system just because of the what-ifs and the coulds. I would want Linux because of its stability and scalability. Bam. Number six, Japanese high-speed train. Japanese people, smart. Sorry, that might be stereotypical, but I believe that runs Linux. Number seven, Lockheed Martin nuclear submarine. I would hope every nuclear station is ran whatever they're using securely and stably. If that's a real world stably. So
yep.
Good on you, Lockheed. Number eight, I actually brought up before, which is basically a electric racing motorcycle called the Mavins.
The Mavizin.
Mavizin's yep. TTX02 electric motorcycle sports bike. If I like sports bikes, I like that. Number nine, TiVo. If you didn't know, hi, my name's Door to Door Geek. I'm on a thing called an internet. Okay. Because of TiVo and how it can be fixed, repaired, hacked, to me almost implies, that is Linux. Number 10, I guess they wanted to just throw it in there. A robotic system for milking cows. Okay, now, I'm not going to lie. I know about this for a couple of reasons. One, Dude Man or Dude Manavi, which is dudmanovi.cz. Really nice guy, has a podcast. He literally farms for a living. And when he can, he podcast and he talks about all kinds of stuff. Okay. Because of him, I've been paying a little bit more attention to people who do this kind of thing. And I was watching a thing on the Discovery Channel, History Channel, I don't know, a couple weeks ago. And I believe they had this exact same system because the pictures I saw look like it. This system does not just milk the cows. This system releases the cows into the feeding area, systematically brings the cows into the system, systematically handles them, very gently pushes them into certain places and then eventually into the milking slot to where they're milked, and it knows how to safely start. It knows how much to do. It knows based on how much it got when to quit. It can do all that kind of thing, and then it intelligently knows when to stop, and it's supposedly ultra, ultra gentle. And then once it's done, it basically pushes them out and pushes them back out into their normal area. So it is virtually a 100% hands-off farm running Lennox. Now, Dude Man, much more hands-on. Much more hands-on.
You have to be.
Yeah, so I just thought that was cool. And there's a couple more on there. The one that people might not realize. Sony PlayStation.
Yep.
Lennox. I'm not gonna lie, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, in fact, the first two or three models of the PlayStation that were actually backwards compatible with the PS2 games, organizations, government, and public were buying them in mass and putting them together to be used as supercomputers. Sony pushed out an update saying, oh, we're not going to let you, because initially you could install an alternate operating system on it. You could just wipe the drive completely and just start over and just use it as a all-purpose machine. And then they disabled that through a software update. But one of the organizations that purchased, I mean, hundreds of these to be used as a supercomputer, I believe, was the United States Air Force. And then after a bit of thinking, Sony changed their minds and then reinstituted that option back into the OS.
So, gotcha. Yeah. You're right. They had it. They stopped it. Here it is again.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yep.
Yeah. There's a couple more. If you guys want to look at them in more detail or the rest of the list, unixmen.com. And that was 15 weird, surprising devices and systems that run on Linux. Okay. This is just a mention because I love pie. And don't forget Cook Tech Inc. on eBay. I believe they just had 50 more cases released in the last week and a half. You need your case. 75. You need quality, super hard cases for the Raspberry Pi. You go on eBay, you look for Cook Tech Inc. And that was the sound of it hitting my head. I got a thick skull. That thing's even thicker. Okay. XBMC 12.0 Beta 1 has native support for the Raspberry Pi. Has native
report. Cool.
That is, this to me could be very much of a game changer. With the extra RAM that's coming on the new Raspberry Pi, it is getting so bleedingly edgily close to really being a good home theater PC solution. And with people like XBMC supporting it out of the box, man, I can honestly see in the next year I'm going over someone's house and, you know, I go to their, watch their TV, and I'm like, what is this? Do you have DirecTV or something? And they're going to say, no, that's my, blah, blah, blah. What's a blah, 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 blah? And then he picks up and shows me a box, and I look at it and I know that's a Raspberry Pi. That's, you know, and I'll freak out and think that's cool. I honestly think that could happen sooner than later.
And of course, we ask, well, how much was this thing? I'd be like, oh, it was only $359.
Yeah, exactly. I'd be like, oh, I'm in the wrong business.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, I thought that was cool. There's been more than a couple of Raspberry Pi related things in the news, I will say. RaspberryPi.org has a lot of good information about what's going on. In fact, dare I say too much information, but that would be blasphemy. So I'm not going to say that. Okay, we just have two more super quickies. The first one was over at Tuts, TUTS.pinhead.tv. I know I've mentioned this URL before on a past show, only because I thought, what am I doing at this website? Pinhead.tv. This is not TV related. I don't consider myself a pinhead, and I don't know what Tuts is, T-U-T-S. But with all that said, this was actually a great step-by-step with screenshots on a newbie's guide to installing Linux as a virtual machine.
Oh.
Yeah, so if you're on Windows, this is a great step-by-step on how to use, I believe it was VMware Player, which I didn't know, thanks to Bill on Going Linux on 2 episodes ago. When I last used VMware Player, all it could do was load a virtual hard disk and load the VM. Now it has the ability to create VMs. So that's great, because Player is what I think a lot of home people need. They don't need anything bigger than that. I don't like VMware, period, as a company, but I got to say they make a good VM solution. So if you want to load Linux in a VM and you're on Windows, this to me is maybe the best, most straightforward and screenshot rich way of doing it. You know, it'll totally hold your hand.
Yeah, the screenshots in here do look pretty straightforward. And like I've said in the past, and Doran, and you said this too, if you're thinking about either using Linux for the first time or trying out a new distro or simply a new desktop environment, use a live CD or use this. That way you're not interrupting your day-to-day system. You get to try it out. Of course, it's not going to be 100%, firing on all cylinders, using every bit of your CPU power. So 3D acceleration and playing video, some things might be a little bit lesser of an experience as if you were doing a native install. But having another option like this is great.
Yeah. And I will say, just to bang on, if you're at all new to Linux, you should always have a VM ready to roll to break.
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody breaks stuff. And honestly, like I said in my talk at OLF, your first goal when you use Linux should be to break it. Because you should be exploring, trying things, and be surprised once in a while it works. Be surprised once in a while it goes boom. Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, I broke my first distro. I completely destroyed it. But then again, mine was kind of an interesting case, but yeah, knowing what you may do wrong is only going to make you that much better at it in the future. So go out and break it.
Yeah, and I'll thank Larry, Tom, and Bill over at goinglinux.com, which I got to say, I'm mentioning a lot of podcasts today. I must be in the holiday spirit. I will say, I don't want to say the best Linux podcast, but really, they're kind of the best Linux podcast. And it's because all three of them talk like normal people is why I hold them in such high esteem. With that said, just a quick vent on them. They got hammered by some of their listeners for bashing Windows. The only line I got to say to that is, look, Microsoft and Windows lovers bash Linux. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. They bash Linux. And I'm going to repeat verbatim a quote. And the quote is, if negativity...
Go ahead.
If negativity comes with a 22, positivity comes with a 45. Okay. What they mean by that is, if someone bad comes up to you with a 22 caliber gun, the way to turn it around to your favor and be positive about things, the way to overtake, to defeat someone coming at you negatively with a 22 is by having a 45 caliber ready for them. If they are okay, if Microsoft is okay with calling Linux a virus, and if Windows fanboys are okay with saying how it's too hard to use, you got the command line, it's insecure, open source isn't secure, it's perfectly okay to bash on Windows, period. And if you don't like people bashing on an operating system, I guess listen to Twit. I don't know what to tell you. Okay. I support Larry, Tom, and Bill with anything they talk about because I trust their judgment. Bashing Windows was never an issue in my book.
Can I guess who said the quote?
Oh, sure, you can.
Was it Dirty Harry?
No.
No? Okay.
Stop. No. It was a rap artist called
course it was.
Called Chris Parker, KRS-One, which stands for
KRS-One,
which stands for Knowledge Reigns Supreme Over Nearly Everyone. Now, he is a hip hop artist. He is not a rap artist. That's number one. Yeah. Rap is the ignorant, vile version of rhyming songs. Hip hop, in my opinion, tried to strive to be something a little bit better, a little bit more global, a little bit more human. So I listened to a lot of him when I was younger. But digress, tangent, rat hole. Okay.
Right.
Going Lennox, just go listen to it. Don't send them hate mail, people. If you want to send them hate mail, just keep, go send it to Twit, somebody else, just not to Larry.
And along those lines, I haven't listened to the shows. I mean, I haven't listened to Computer America or Going Lennox in quite a while. And it's just, it's not that I stopped listening to them for a specific reason. So I haven't heard the things that they've said specifically to warrant a decent response in their favor. But what I will say is that when you're talking about technology or talking about anything in life, really, you shouldn't. What I never do is just point out shortcomings about whatever it is. For first of all, don't talk bad about it unless you haven't used it yourself. I will say that most Linux users have probably come over from another operating system, such as Windows, whereas most Windows users have probably not used Linux to the degree that Linux users have used Windows. That's probably a fact. Probably. Okay? I'm guessing. On top of that, whenever anybody asks me in my opinion on whether it be a car, a computer, an OS, a salad, whatever, I have to speak to my personal experience of whatever they're asking me. Now, if it was positive, it would be positive. If it was negative, it was negative. So if they're speaking negatively about their personal experience with Microsoft as a company or a specific product, then that's just their perspective. It may or may not be the truth, but it's what they have to bring to that show to make it genuine and honest. So, yeah, I'm going to have to go. I'm going to have to go listen to those episodes now because I'm very interested to hear what was said.
Yeah. And just the last thing I got to say about Larry, Tom, and Bill. I can't say everything 100% accurately on a show. It's my disclaimer. I'm human.
Yep.
I'm going to say things wrong. Larry, Tom, Bill, relax. Okay. When you say something wrong, relax. The majority of your listeners don't care. If you say core and you meant processor, or you said processor and you meant core. Okay. I'm with you guys. I understand you guys. Just keep moving forward.
Definitely.
Yeah. And I would really love to get out to the West Coast to shake Larry's hand, but I digress.
Well, you're going to have to swing by my place first and we'll drive down.
Well, you, Martin, Spork Saber, Lennox Dad, Larry Bushy, Rateo isn't too far from there. And there's at least two or three more guys. So I trust me, cataloged. As long as I don't get hit in the head too hard.
I'm thinking scale 2014.
Oh, good. Thank you for not saying 2013 because it's literally like
I know
35 not days away or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We'll make it happen.
I would love it. I would love it if I can do it. Okay, last thing I just want to throw out there. A lot of people bash Microsoft for being evil. A lot of people out there bash Apple for being closed source proprietary and filled with lawyers. A lot of people bash ISPs, internet service providers. A lot of people bash Dell. A lot of, you know, there's a lot of people out there doing a lot of bashing. And there's one company I feel like slips through the cracks, man. Nobody complains about them and says how evil they are. And I believe, like, I kind of believed about Apple 8 years ago. 8 years ago, I believed Apple was one of the worst companies for computing in general, but they weren't that popular, so they weren't really that damaging. You know what I mean? Now they are really big, and they're really damaging to free software and a bunch of other things. I believe this company is even worse, and that is Cisco. Cisco, I believe, if they were as influential and as big as a Microsoft or an Apple or a Google, free software would be in a lot of danger, a whole lot of danger. Okay. Vietta, is an option where people can use in place of Cisco. Vietta Core 6.5 open source network OS is now out. I will say, I'm not going to say this is like a direct competitor feature for feature and beats Cisco. No, Cisco's where it's at because they do something right. I know it's not warranty and I know it's not support. They do that horribly, but they do something right. Vietta, though, I do believe has grown huge in the last 3 years. I'm sorry, now it's 6 years. Man, they've been around for 6 years.
Yeah.
These people are going to maybe take over, handle a big percentage, a moderate percentage at least, of networking operating systems. And by that, I mean like big switch and router operating systems. I honestly think sooner than later. So I'm really happy somebody is challenging Cisco. I think, you know.
Yeah, this looks like a very good option. I had never really considered it myself based on the fact that, I mean, I'm a pretty basic user when it comes to just my home stuff, but to have a big business challenged by any sort of open source alternative, I mean, like I said earlier, kind of, you know, it's only going to make both better potentially. So,
yeah. Well, very and cool. And you and me, this almost means nothing to us. We are never going to use Vietta. We're never going to run Vietta. We're never going to be directly impacted as we know it by Vietta or Cisco. But every packet we push over these interwebs, I guarantee it goes through this hardware a lot. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
And I will say, I find it almost funny. One of the backers of this company, where they did some fundraising, you know, kind of like Kickstarter fundraising, they had a $10 million Citrix Systems, I don't want to say pledge or donation, funding from Citrix. Citrix is one of those companies. They have a lot to gain by being optimized fully over networks and to be maximized, optimized over large area networks. You need the Cisco type support, basically. And Cisco's so closed, they don't support nothing unless they're making a lot of cash out of it. So I like seeing other companies support Vietta. I really do think it's going to be really big, especially in developing countries and third world countries where they can't afford Cisco equipment because Cisco equipment is expensive as sin.
Yeah.
So I really want to see these people just grow and expand and get bigger.
Very cool. Something I'll definitely have to look at in the near future here. All right, Dor, was that our last link tonight?
It's really the last one we have, and I'll just say to Martin in the chat room, the issue for me is not walking in the doors to scale. It's getting out to LA from Maryland, Baltimore, Maryland. Something tells me there's not too much that's cheap about that.
Well, I flew from Portland to Maryland, and it wasn't as expensive as I thought it was going to be. So regardless, we have over a year to save up and to make sure it happens. It's going to happen.
Well, and I'll say, if I go out to LA, I honestly would like to have my whole family go out for one big reason. Scales by the very beginning of the January, I believe. My wedding anniversary is January 1st.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't want to say happy anniversary. I'm packing my bags tomorrow to go to LA, hun. Now, I'd like to bring the family out because I don't think my wife's ever been to LA. And I know my kids haven't been to LA. So I'd like for them to say, hey, I've been to LA. Yeah.
Well, it's definitely an option. We'll take a look at it.
Very cool.
See what we can do. All right. So if that was the last link, I do have some emails.
Cool.
Queued up here that I'd like to read. Here we go. Yeah. Just a small handful this week, guys. It's been quite the week, but I committed to at least reading some emails at the end of every show and or listening to voicemails, and we're going to continue to do that. Charles Stell sent a message in. He says, hi guys, just an observation. Door's speech problem is actually good for me. My wife says I have a one-track mind. You could set off a bomb next to me, and when I finished what I was working on, I would turn around and walk into the crater. Door's emphasis on app names and so forth seems to reinforce it into my skull, allowing me to remember what he said on the podcast. Thanks for all the good information, and welcome to Cody, Charles.
I understand exactly what he's talking about. I almost overemphasize names because I really feel it's important to, one, say it correctly, but also phonetically saying something correctly, because when you're listening to this in a car, phonetic vocalization, I think, can help more than accurate verbiage. So I tried a little bit of both, especially on Android App Addicts. I kind of go ballistic with making sure I'm saying that name right. It's the number 2, you know, kind of like right. That.
And that's why I give you such a hard time about Kupfer.
I know.
Because as a listener for well over a year, I could never find it because of how you were mispronouncing it. But now I love it. So
I don't know. I think someone on a Linux Basics lug, this is my excuse, someone in the Linux Basics lug pronounced it Kupfer.
Ah, okay.
And it was
like, stuck.
And it stuck. And that's my excuse. And if that's no one out there will step up and say they did it, I don't care. Knucklehead Tech did it. He's the guy. I blame him.
Josh, it's your fault. Mm-hmm. And Door is well known for displacing blame when it comes to mispronouncing
yes.
Applications.
Especially on Knucklehead Tech, because he's such a bad influence.
He is. Okay. And thank you, Charles. Thank you for the welcome. It's been a fun transition for me. I was never really nervous coming on the shows, but I feel I'm getting better, and I'm definitely enjoying the interaction with the other listeners and fans more and more. And that's only going to continue with you guys to send in these emails. So please keep them coming.
Yeah.
Really, really appreciate it.
And I ain't gonna lie, I had a good feeling about Cody, but I honestly didn't know until we actually started doing the show. The one thing I really like is Cody's outspokenness, I think, helps. And your ability to communicate on a level that is comprehensible by a lot of people is one thing that I am immensely thankful for.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, and I will say, during the recording of this episode, the most recent Techie Geek got published.
Oh, fantastic. Ooh, now I have something to listen to while I work tonight. I have to go do a late night, so yeah. Very, very cool. Very cool. Oh, and along those lines, due to an oversight of my own, last week's Linux The Rest of Us has not been posted or edited yet. That should go up in the next 24, 48 hours. So please check that out, as I'm sure you already have if you're listening to this. But live guys, know it's coming soon. Very cool. And once again, thank you, Charles, for writing in. Just as a quick side note, thank you to all the people who've been hitting me up on Google+. I've gotten a huge influx of ads and follows. Even a couple on Twitter. And guys, I'm sorry, I just don't use Twitter anymore, but feel free to add me. That's fine. But yeah, it's been a worthwhile experience. So I definitely keep the messages coming. And then, we got three more emails, all of them, or three mail course, I should say three more correspondences. They were all from Spork Saber, and, I'm going to go ahead and address them one by one, kind of those from smallest to largest. So, first of all, Spork Saber, asked, in Linux The Rest of Us 107, Cody seems to like beer. Is he interested in homebrewing? Does he listen to pod brewers? Yes, I would say interested in beer would be an understatement, Spork Saber, as anyone who saw me at OLF would testify to in court. No, I really do love beer. And it's not just the I have to drink it to get loaded type of thing. I mean, I really, really do enjoy beer. I got a lot of my heavy drinking done when I was a kid. And luckily, the guys that I started with, that I was working with at the time when I was turning 21, they were real connoisseurs, and we have a huge amount of breweries within my local vicinity. So I got to try a lot of different things, like right off the bat, instead of just being like a Coors Light kid or like a Budweiser guy. You know, I got to try a lot of different stuff, have a pretty open palate, and I do really love it. As far as do I listen to pod brewers? Yes, I have listened to some of the early episodes, and there's a couple of reasons I don't listen anymore, and they're not negative, and I'm sure I will go back and listen to the back catalog just because I like the guys involved and I like the subject matter. But when I listened to episode 1 and 2, I did it one night at work, and I remember taking down voracious notes as I was listening, and then that night on my lunch break and then my subsequent break researching and planning exactly what I was going to buy when I got off work that day. And because when I get into a new thing, like a hobby, I don't half-ass it. I mean, I have to know everything about it before I go in, and I don't buy like the entry level, whatever. I always go for the mid to high range. And I firmly believe that you shouldn't give someone the recipe to whatever they really love. So I will try homebrewing soon, especially after talking with Russ and Tracy. And I'm definitely looking forward to having that as a great resource to fall back on, as well as you personally and the other guys on the show. So I do enjoy the show, the format, the content, and I can't wait to start homebrewing myself and enjoy the show more.
Yeah, listening to Byer Brown and his very high-pitched, annoying voice is fun. But honestly, listening to the insight Spork can give nearly blows my mind, and I don't think he realizes at least how little the common person doesn't know about the art of beer, the history of beer, and the current status of beer around the world. So the stuff he brings, I to me, they're like Jeopardy factoids. I just love them.
Very cool. Well, that's actually, you know what? The wife hit me up for a Christmas present yesterday, because apparently I'm the hardest person to shop for in the world, and we have a brewery supply store not half an hour away from here. So maybe convenient. Yeah, it just so happens. So yeah, you know what? I'm gonna go through the back catalog starting tomorrow, and then I'm sure I'll have a couple kegs brewed by next week. Also, Spork Saber suggested that Cody, your sign off should be different every episode until one sticks. It will happen. And I'll say Bill Wilson, Red Dwarf, actually gave me one that I used on the episode that has yet to be published. And I really like it, and I'll use it again tonight, so stay tuned for that. And then finally, Spork Saber hit me up personally and said, Cody, and this is in response to my a question about kids and Linux. Says, Cody, my kids use phone and computer just like your kids. The youngest, 1.5 years of age, pounds on the keyboard and unlocks the phone and dials numbers. My oldest, 3.5 years of age, uses the TV remote to turn on his TV shows, navigates my phone to the camera function and takes random pics, and uses my laptop to play the two games I have on it. And then he put a link into the email about the games. I put a link into the games on the desktop. Oh, excuse me. I put a link to the games on the desktop and resized it to be super big so he doesn't have to search for it. I will let you know more as I have time. Spork Saber.
Yeah. Let's see you do that in Windows with that extra software making icons huge. Come on. You can't do it. And I'll say, I can't believe I forgot this one point about Spork Saber. His name is Spork Saber. That's a great name. I'm sorry.
It is. If there's one thing that I need to carry with me, a couple things. Okay, let's say four things in the zombie apocalypse I need. One has got to be some light chain mail. Mm-hmm. Okay. One has got to be some sort of bladed weapon. One has got to be one of the CookTek Ink Raspberry Pi cases, right? And then four, got to be a spork, hands down. Because you can get everything done with all those four things.
Right. I'm sorry. Stormwatch said in a different IRC chat room, tell Cody we are all hard to shop for because they just don't make shoes, dresses, or accessories that look good on us.
There you go. Yeah, I heard you chuckle when I said that, but literally I buy a lot of little things all throughout the year. So she's tried to get me gifts in the past and I either have it or I'm like, well, here's the reason why I didn't buy that. And I tell her and she's just kind of deflated. So this year she's making very, very sure to tiptoe around and find exactly what I do want. So
good.
I'm going to throw that at her and either she's going to enable me in my love for alcohol or we'll figure something else out.
Right.
All right. Well, thank you, Spork Saber, for those three correspondences. I hope we answered them accurately, and thank you personally again today for the ad on Google Plus, as well as the rest of you. Please continue to hit me up there. Door, any closing comments? Where can we find you?
Okay. Again, the Kickstarter is already done when this gets published. I honestly want to thank everybody for every retweet, every Google Plus, every Facebook posting regarding the progression, the positive progression of Podnuts and the Kickstarter. Everybody who donated, God bless you. God bless you. I'm going to throw a question out for everybody because nobody's been able to answer me yet. I got the stickers in, I think, good big stickers too. Good like 4.5 by 3 inch stickers for my Kickstarter. I don't know of a way to ship these to people and not have to worry about bending. I look, to be honest, at like the CD mailers because they're, mm-hmm. Rigid. They're not quite big enough. So
how big are they?
To be honest, they're about the size of my hand in length. And I have like an average hand, not a big hand. So I want to say it's at least 4.5 to 5 inches tall by 2.5 to 3 inches wide. Big stickers.
Will it fit in like a book?
Well,
as like a big bookmark?
Yeah. I can't ship books to everybody.
You can. Here's what you do. Go to a garage sale or go to like a local book, whatever, buy some of their cheap romance novels or whatever. Trust me, this is going somewhere legit. Okay. If I am to ship you a VHS tape at the post office, you pay a ridiculous amount for it. But the post office actually has a book rate, which is hugely, hugely reduced.
What?
So, I've heard of this. Yeah. Yeah. Back when I was selling collectible cards on eBay, it was cheaper for me to go buy like a 50 cent or dollar book, put the card in a hard plastic case, slip it in the book, and ship it as a book rather than ship it as a card in bubble wrap.
Huh.
I'm serious. If you calculate how much it would cost, even if you have, 25, 50 of them or whatever, if you can just go buy like a bunch of dump bin books, even like you look like Goodwill or St. Vincent de Paul Center, and you can buy them by the pound, right? Okay. Just go buy a bunch of books. Get one. Here's what you're going to do, because I contributed, I'm pretty sure, but you're going to send me a sticker anyway. go buy one book, send it to go to the post office, see how much it would cost, send it to me, and then use that as a basis for how to send them out.
Cody, I would say, I don't know if you're genius or insane. Sure. I'll just say that's yet to be determined.
Okay.
But you definitely got me intrigued.
Yeah, it works. It works. Trust me.
I do see that when I went to the main site, there was a media mail, but now when I go to, it's called media mail, a cost-effective way to send educational materials in 2 to 8 days. This service has restrictions on the type of media that can be sent. This includes, but I looked for book shipping. And I do.
And also, this is like, 10, 12 years ago, so they may have changed the name of it. But if you go down to your local post office, say, do you have a reduced rate for books? Because I just need to send this book to my friend. And it's, of course, going to be like a used romance novel, and they're going to look at you weird.
Right. Well, this does say perfect for sending used books.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. Yeah. Huh. Yeah. And also, if you put it in the middle of a thick book, like an inch, 3/4 inch or 1.5 inch thick book, that's going to hold it and prevent it from getting bent as well, which is why I used it for cards.
Huh. Genius.
Yep. So where can we find you, Door?
Door Geek. I'm sorry. Door
Train back on track.
Exactly. door2doorgeek@gmail.com. I'm going to ask people for just one more thing. if there is a Linux, see, okay. No other Linux podcast I listen to apparently ever try to promote other Linux podcast except for me. And I'm not saying I'm great or anything, but what I will say is if you guys listen to Linux podcast and you don't hear me promote them, send me a link to them or just shoot me an email at doortodoorgeek@podnuts.com and tell me what that podcast is. I'm always looking for more podcasts to listen to, and I'm sure there's more than a couple out there I don't have in my podcast catcher.
Yeah, and I welcome listening to Linux podcasts, any new ones that crop up, any ones that may have pod faded but are still have a decent back library that we can still gain valuable info from. Shoot us an email. We can potentially have an episode focused toward that. On the flip side of that, you guys did an episode on Linux Basics where you guys like the top five podcasts you listen to. They weren't all tech related.
Right.
And I have a couple that I would love to bring to you guys that aren't tech related, but they're still very, very great. So, yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah. Insight into the future of a new episode. Mm. Very cool. All right. You all good there, Dor?
Yeah. I just got to stop looking at this media mail thing. That's okay. After the show.
Okay. All right. As always, I'm Cody Cooper. You can hit me up on Google Plus. I'm just Cody Cooper. No weird name, as you really can't do it unless it's in parentheses or quotations. But yeah, that's fine. Yeah, Cody Cooper on Google Plus. Keep sending those requests because I basically add everyone unless it looks completely weird and then I don't. But yeah, if you are going to add me on Google Plus, let me know what you think of the shows in a message right off the bat, because I almost always will immediately to respond to any requests. Hey, what do you think of the shows? Because I would like to hear it. As always, the Accessible Computing Foundation, great organization. Check them out, the acf.co. Our good friend Jonathan Nato is a huge part of that, runs that. If you want to bring accessibility and software into the hands of people who may not otherwise be able to use it due to vision, hearing impairments, a variety of different issues, they are being left behind, and you can help by contributing even as low as $2 a month to the ACF and help bring this technology into the hands of people who really need it. Definitely check out thetechiegeek.com as well. Great show, which is coming back. Actually, not even any day now. They literally posted an episode while we were on the air. Mm-hmm. Really looking forward to that. And for those of you guys who are live, please do us a favor really quick, because we're talking just hours away. By the time this gets published, like Dor said, the Kickstarter is going to be done. If you can, while you're online or sometime tonight, just go search for Steve Cherubino and reshare his latest update for his Kickstarter. Because if we do that, even the X amount of people that are in the chat now, and then ask for a repost potentially, that's just going to roll it forward over the next 12 to 15 hours, and hopefully we hit the goal, because I would love to see that happen.
Indeed.
All right. So with that, we are signing off. And remember, Linux is not just for the rest of us. It's for all of us. Good night.